Although I didn't have the schus of knowing Aaron Bulman personally, I've heard so much about him from the members of the shul. I can feel the impact that he's had on the shul down to this very day, and I only wish I had had the chance to meet him. But in any case, certainly the tonight cheer, I'm very proud to dedicate to the memory of Aaron Elio ben Rav Yehuda Arya Leib, and also, of course, to the memory of Chazen Khan. As the topic of this lecture is traditionally something that combines Pesach with a little bit of history, I believe I was told to introduce. So that's what I'm going to try to do, and this is a topic that's very much of a practical nature on the night of the Seder. And this topic is the amount of matzah and maror, for that matter, that one is required to consume at the Seder, and of wine in the four cups, and how the amount that people have perceived to have been required has changed over the generations, from the times of Chazal, the sages of the Mishnah, down to the present day, with different approaches amongst the contemporary poskim as to the issue. So let's start off with, as you see on your sheet, source number one. The Rambam tells us in Hilchos Chametz U'Matzah, it's one part is in Perek Vav, one part is in Perek Zayin. Mitzvah sasei min haTorah, it is a positive command biblically. In other words, not rabbinic, it's an absolute requirement, Torah level, nothing to discuss. Lechol matzah b'leil chamisha asar, to eat matzah on the night of the 15th. U'misha achol kezayis yotzi deichov aso. The Rambam says, when one eats the volume of an olive, one has fulfilled one's obligation. And this is very normal. In most of the obligations, when we have a Torah commandment to eat something, the minimum amount that's considered to be eating is a kezayis, is the volume of an olive, for example. So, for example, when you eat a kezayis of bread, when you eat an olive's volume of bread, you're required to say birkas hamazon, or a kezayis of other foods, you're required to make the appropriate bracha following this food, because a kezayis is the smallest significant amount of eating that the Torah recognizes. The Gemara says in Erevin that all the measurements, the shiurim of mitzvos, are halacha l'moshe misinai. And then again, he says also for maror, imachal me'echad me'ano me'chameshlan kezayis yatza. Once you eat an olive's volume of maror, of one of the vegetables that are kosher to be used for maror, one has fulfilled one's obligation for eating maror. One can make the bracha l'chilas maror, and for the matzah l'chilas matzah, no problem. That is the minimum amount that one is required to eat on Seder night. So what exactly is the volume of an olive? Now, that's sort of like asking, what color is George Washington's white horse? Of course, the volume of an olive is, we all know what olives look like. They come canned, jarred, canned, whatever, in the store. All of us know what olives look like, and that's exactly what the Mishnah says in Maseches Kelim. Kabeitza she'amru. Kabeitza, certain types of, other types of shiurim for eating in the Torah, are an egg's volume instead of an olive's volume. So first the Mishnah discusses what is considered to be an egg's volume. And it's talking here about chicken eggs. It doesn't say explicitly, but that's what everybody assumes it's talking about. Sha'amru lo gedola v'lo ktana ela beinonis. When we say the volume of an egg, we mean not a huge egg, not a tiny egg. We mean an average, medium-sized egg. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, mevi gedola shebagdolo suktana shebaktano. So you bring the biggest egg possible and the smallest egg possible. And you put them together in water, they displace the water. You take half of the volume of water that the two eggs displace, the hugest and the tiniest. Obviously, you get a medium-sized egg. So you have to do an experiment. So one might say here that Reb Yehuda is the prototype of certain people nowadays who want to give very exact measurements about how much matzah you have to eat. But in any case, we don't paskin like that, as the Mishnah goes on to tell us. Rabbi Yossi Omer, v'chimi modieni ezu gedola ve'ezu huktana. How can you determine which is the absolute biggest egg in the world and which is the absolute smallest egg in the world? It makes no sense. You can't do an exact experiment when it comes to these things. Ela hakol lefi dato shel roeh. Rather, that the way the Torah says that the measurement is determined, the halacha l'moshe misinai of how the measurement of an egg's volume is determined is lefi daito shel roeh, according to your estimation. If you eat a certain amount of stuff and you think you ate about the size of an average-sized egg, then that's considered a kibitza. That's, it's not a suffik even. It's not a matter of doubt that you just go for, in a manner of stringency or something of that nature. It's that that's the very nature of the shiur. The very nature of the measurement itself, according to the Torah, goes in accordance with the perspective of the viewer. So then the Mishnah continues, something a little bit more germane for our topic of Seder night. Kizayis she'amru lo gadol velo katan ela beinoni ze'aguri. A kizayis, the olives volume that the sages refer to, is not a big one and not a small one, but rather a medium-sized olive, which is of a strain called aguri. And the commentators explain that it's called aguri because shamno agur besocho, that its oil is kept well inside of it, and that's why it's called aguri. But in any case, that's a medium-sized olive. And in fact, there are three or four strains of olives that grow in Eretz Yisrael in the region. One is very small, one is very big, and there are two that are more in the middle. So if you average out the sizes of the two in the middle, one comes out with a volume of approximately 4 cc's, 4 milliliters, which is very small. It's a rig size. It's smaller than the average olive that you buy in the store. An olive that you buy in the store is probably selected to be large because we Americans like big things. We like jumbo-sized things, so we want to buy the biggest olives. But that's not even what Chazal are referring to. They're referring to a medium-sized olive. So, seemingly, according to what should come out from this Mishnah, it's hakolafi datul sharoa. So, when you're eating your matzah at the Seder, you take a few bites, you estimate that you ate about the volume of an average olive, and that's it. That's all you have to do. That's the size of a kizayis that you have to eat at the Seder. Our next source is the Sefer HaEshkol, which is an early halachic source, which is discussing the phenomenon of the fact that some people, some geonim, some of the early authorities after the sealing of the Talmud, gave the size of a kibitza, gave the size of an egg's volume, using the coins that were in use at the time, called drams or called dinarim or different types of coins that existed in the times of the geonim. They gave an exact measurement of the size of a kibitza based on these coins, so everybody in any place could just use his coin and figure out how big a kibitza was. So this someone asked one of the geonim, Rav Shrira, it's brought in the chuvas of Rav Shrira Gaon. I think it was actually asked to a different geon. So he asked him, why is it that he had to give, that people were giving the estimation of the value of the egg in with coins? You should just look at it, see how big an egg is, and that's it. So Rav Shura gives the following answer. Havu yodim she'ein le'elu shiurim mishkal kesef lo b'mishna v'lo b'talmud shelanu kol ikar. You're right that the original sages of the Mishnah and the Gemara did not give an exact weight for these things. V'ilu bikshu la'sei shiur mishkal min adinarim hayu osin meikar. If they had wanted to, they certainly could have. They had coins. They had standard coins in the times of the Gemara as well. So why didn't they give a standard measurement in terms of weight, in terms of coins, in the times of the Gemara? Ela shenasnu ashir mikitnes uperos shemitzuyin tamid ve'ein lomar shenishtanu. That the reason that Chazal gave the measurements with terms of comparing it to different types of fruits and eggs as well, is that these are things that are always around. In other words, weights and measures, they change. But these types of fruits and these types of natural things, they're always around. They don't change. So people in any place, in any time, will be able to know what the shear is according to the Torah by just looking around in their natural environment. V'hai diktsas rabbanan shiru lefi daitam beitza velo shiru kazayis v'chakoteves v'chagurgeres. So why did some big rabbis give the shear for an egg's volume, but not for the other ones, like an olive's volume, like a kizayis? Mishum de beitza tluyin ba mili nefishe kavusav eifa ve'omer kulon mishtarin bebeitza. Because you see in the Talmud that a beitza is used as a base system of measurement, even for larger shiurim. So for example, for the amount of flour that you have to knead into dough to have to be mafresh challah, to separate the challah portion, That's a bigger shear called an ephah, but it's given in terms of the smaller shear of eggs. So instead of going through all the trouble to have to estimate this measurement based on the volume of eggs, some rabbis decided that they would tell you what the measurement of an egg is in terms of a certain coin. So it'd be easier for you to calculate the bigger measurements. Lefikach shiaruha lefidaitam. But the other shiurim, such as an olive's bulk, and in terms of even an egg's bulk for when you're just have to use it in terms of estimating how much you need to eat, for those things, Chazal left it, all the rabbis left it, according to the perception of the person consuming the food stuff. So far we've seen no change, basically, from the original halacha, as it was said in the Mishnah, that everything goes in accordance with how people perceive it. You see, though, from here, as is true, that the Gonim and the Rambam as well do give the Shiurim for Torah purposes in terms of weight of coins that were in use in the Arab world at that time. And we actually have these coins nowadays, and we can use them to figure out what they were talking about. So we'll get to that a little bit later. So it should be noted, by the way, that until now, in terms of the Geonim, and all throughout the Rishonim of Spain, all the Rishonim who lived in Mediterranean countries, the early halachic authorities, not a single one of them attempted to give a weight or any sort of description as to how big a kezias was, and they was simply assumed that it would be the shear of how big an olive is. Some people quote the Rambam as saying that a kezias is a third the size of an egg, but that is not true. The Rambam merely says that a kezias is less than a third of the volume of an egg. So really, even in the Rambam too, there's no indication of exactly how big an olive is, the main assumption being that an olive is the size of an olive. And in fact, there's an explicit statement that's found in one of the works of the Rashba, who was one of the major halachic authorities in Spain before the expulsion. And he just, this is not a statement discussing explicitly and in focus of how much a kezias is, but he just says offhand, Chameshes rebeitzim shein harbe mishishim zesim. 15 eggs have a much greater volume than 60 olives. So which means that an olive is less than a quarter of the volume of an egg. But again, it says much more, so it doesn't give you any indication of how big he considered an olive to be. It just tells you that it's less than a quarter of the size of an egg. And that corresponds to everything we know about olives, right? Isn't an olive less than a quarter of the size of an egg? The problem arises when we get to the Tosfos. The Tosfos and the authorities in Northern Europe started to discuss trying to figure out how big the Torah's kezias is, how big the size of an olive is. So the Tosfos and Chulin say, V'hod amrinan perek basra de Yoma, in the last perek of Yoma we say, Deves hablia machzik kebeitzas tarnegoles. It says in the last perek of Yoma that a person can swallow one egg at a time. The Amrina Perik Amrlo in a different tractate in Maseches Krisos, Dein Beisablea Machzik Yoser Mishnei Zesim, that you could only swallow two olives at once. You can swallow two olives at once, but you can swallow one egg at once.
Without chewing.
So what's the conclusion here that Tosis derives? Mashma Dishnei Zesim Machzik, meaning that the Shiurim are equivalent, that two olives are the same size as one egg. Now, it should be noted, first of all, that this is only one opinion in Tosfos. This is the opinion of the Ri, but there's another opinion of Rabbeinu Tam that would, according to his opinion, it would come out that an olive has to be less than a third the size of an egg, the same as the Rambam said. So there's no proof for anything according to Rabbeinu Tam, but according to this Tosfos, it sounds like an olive is half the size of an egg. And who here, raise your hand if you've ever seen, remember, we're talking about medium-sized olives. Forget medium-sized olives. Who here has ever seen a jumbo olive, even, that was half the size of an egg? Even the smallest egg. So this is a major issue. And in fact, you'll see the halachic authorities are starting to quote this. For example, the Maharil, who is one of the earliest codifiers of Ashkenazi minhagim. He was based in Western Europe, so sometimes his minhagim don't correspond to our practices because a lot of our practices are more from Eastern Europe. But the Maharil says, when he's discussing the laws of how much matzah you have to eat at the Seder, the Maharil says that you should eat half the size of an egg, because a kezias, an olive's bulk, is half the size of an egg. Oh, great question. That's the million-dollar question. Okay, so the answer to that is implied in actually source number 6, which is from the Ravia, who's also a very early German halachic authority. V'chol heicha shetzarech kezias, anytime where you have to eat an olive's bulk according to Torah law, tzarech sheya maichel bahar vacha, you have to eat a lot. Why do you have to eat a lot? We don't know how big an olive is, so you have to eat a lot to make sure you get it right. You're groping in the dark. They were trying to derive the size of an olive based on the discussions in the Talmud. They weren't looking at what an olive was, how big it actually was. So again, it's been documented, especially by Rabbi Slifkin in his famous article on this topic. He says he spoke with professors of culinary history, and they confirmed this, that in Northern Europe at this time, there were no olives. They were not imported from the Mediterranean. Olive oil was a very, very rare delicacy, but olives straight off the tree, they had no familiarity with. There's a student of the Rush who writes that he went to Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Germany, then he traveled to Eretz Yisrael. And he writes in his writings that we were struggling in Europe to determine how big a kezias was. Some said it was half the size of an egg. But now I got there to Israel. I see olives all the time. And you see there's tons of them that fit into an egg. So he was willing to use his actual visual assessment to determine how big a kezias was for Torah purposes. So let's stop right here. And we'll say, okay, so the Ashkenazi Rishonim didn't know how big an olive was. We know how big olives are. So the amount of matzah that you have to eat at the Seder, halacha lemaisa, and the amount of maror you have to eat at the Seder is the size of an olive. Just, you know, take a few bites of matzah, estimate till you get the size of an olive. Granted, it's a little harder with our matzah because it's so thin. When it's nice and thick and soft, like matzah used to be, so it's a lot, if you just break off a little piece, that's the size of an olive. So I think Rabbi Slifkin says that he did an experiment, and the size of an olive of matzah is about half the size of a credit card. A very small amount. Maybe the size of a whole credit card, some say, but you know, if you want to be machmir, you can eat the size of a whole credit card. So let's stop right here. We'll paskin that all you have to eat is a real kezias, the size of an olive. Just estimate it, like the Mishnah and Kalim says, and forget everything. The problem is that we have a little bit of an issue, which is source number 7, that the Shulchan Aruch, who is viewed as the most classical compendium of Jewish law, says, Shir kezias, yesh omrim dahavi kachatzi beitza. Some say that the amount of matzah to constitute a kezias is half the size of an egg. So, why did he say Yesh Omrim? There are those who say, why didn't he just paskin like that? Or some say he wanted to paskin like the Rambam, that it's close to a third the size of an egg, but that's a little bit questionable. But why does he quote this opinion that he knew to be false? So, what the Shulchan Aruch does a lot of times is when he finds something explicit in the earlier authority, so he quotes it. So, for example, if nobody else talks about how big a kezias is because they knew it was the size of an olive, so he doesn't find any chiddush in that. He doesn't find anything he can sink his teeth into in quoting in his Shulchan Aruch. What he did find is he found a tosfos that said a chiddush. It said a new ruling that a kezias is half the size of an egg. So he quoted it because it was the only person who discussed exactly how big an olive should be based on the discussion in the Talmud. So first of all, he does say it's only Yesh Omrim, which sounds like we don't really paskin like that, but he says you should be stringent to comply with that opinion. It seems clear to me, at least, that according to the basic halacha, there is certainly that in kezias is the size of an olive, and that's what we should paskin like for example, you can make a bracha achrona, You could say an after bracha if you estimate that you ate the size of an average olive, which is about 4 cc's, as I said. But as a chumrah, out of deference to the Shulchan Aruch that he quoted this opinion, for achilas matzah, which is a biblical commandment on Seder night, one should eat matzah until one estimates that one has eaten half the volume of an egg. Again, that's for a healthy person. Again, it's a chumrah. I hasten to say that this whole thing is a chumrah, and that if anybody is ill or can only eat a small portion of matzah, one can certainly rely on the basic halacha. That's the halacha, that a kezayis is actually the size of an olive. However, even if you want to be stringent to eat half the size of an egg, it's not necessary to use those charts. Well, it's sufficient to eat until you've estimated that you've eaten half the size of an egg, and that is perfectly sufficient. So the Rama adds, V'yochlenu biyachad v'lo ma'at mat, and one should eat it, swallow it in one swallow, and not bit by bit. Now, this is easy if you think that a kezayis is the size of an olive. If it's half the size of an egg, it's a little bit more difficult to pull this off. And certainly if you get to the bigger shiurim, which we'll discuss in a second, that some people have an even bigger shiur, this is very hard to pull off. And you see some people, when they're eating matzah at their seder, they're gulping it down, trying to stuff as much as they can into their mouth at once so they could swallow it in one fell swoop. And I think that nothing else is necessary than to quote Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who said about this practice, this is not the normal method of eating, and he doubts whether one has fulfilled one's obligation to eat matzah if one eats in this manner. The Rambam points out, he says, once you've eaten an olive, that's the minimum shear. You've fulfilled one's obligation. However, many people want to learn from this formulation of the Rambam's language that every amount of matzah that one eats on Seder night is a fulfillment of a mitzvah. Even though you're not actually required to do so, you just have to eat an olive's bulk. The more you eat, the merrier in terms of fulfilling the mitzvah. But you don't have to drive yourself crazy. You're eating matzah over the course of the meal. You have korich, you have the sandwich, you have the afikomen. You eat tons of matzah over the course of the evening. But again, any person, normally, when they're eating bread with their meal, is going to eat much more than an olive's bulk. So really, you shouldn't really need to think at all about how much matzah you're eating. So that's just something to keep in mind. A person who has a normal appetite and keeps in mind that it's a mitzvah to eat matzah on Seder night, so will certainly not have any problem at all with the shiurim, at least according to me. So we've covered so far the amount of matzah and maror that one has to eat at the Seder. Maror, by the way, of course, is a vegetable. It's a lettuce or an endive or something like that. It's not really horseradish. Horseradish was just a substitute that people used in Northern Europe when it was still very cold and lettuce wasn't growing yet. So when you have these gigantic shiurim of a kezayis and people are trying to force down this huge thing of horseradish, it gets to be sakonis nefashis. It gets to be really putting life in danger almost. So again, first of all, if you're eating lettuce, you can still eat much more than a kezayis. I don't know if there's a mitzvah to eat more maror than necessary or just matzah, but if you're eating lettuce, you can certainly eat much more than an olive's bulk of lettuce without any problem whatsoever, even if it's a little bitter. Nowadays, in America, where we have lettuce all year round, in my opinion, one should not use horseradish for maror. One should use, if you want to eat some horseradish because that's what your ancestors did in Europe, if you want to have that as well at the Seder, then that is, it's sort of become part of the Ashkenazi Seder experience for Tati to cry, and the children, you know, look at him while he's making the Seder. So if you want to fulfill that, one should eat some horseradish separately from the lettuce, not put it on the lettuce, that causes problems. But one should certainly make the bracha and eat the kezayis from lettuce or endives or something of that nature that are acceptable. That's a whole different shear, whether maror has to be bitter or not. Yeah, there are certainly opinions that the maror actually does have to be bitter. Right, certainly at least some types of romaine lettuce have a bitter aftertaste. Yeah, it's definitely an opinion out there that maror actually has to be bitter. But again, horseradish isn't really bitter, it's more sharp. So that's a very big problem. But in my opinion, one should not make the bracha and eat the kezayis of horseradish to fulfill the mitzvah mer. Now we've gotten our bread portion and our vegetable portion of the meal out of the way. We could recline normally. We can eat normal portions in a normal manner. And as so we've gotten our festive meal out of this part and not our gastronomic hardship. So we'll see if we can do the same for the amount of wine that one has to drink for the four cups. Again, this is supposed to be part of a festive meal, that one drinks a few cups of wine during the meal. It's not supposed to be, this isn't supposed to be a hardship whatsoever, but we're going to try to find out what the amount of wine that one has to drink for the four cups is. In source number 8, it's the first source on page 2, the Tosefta, the other compilation of Tannaitic literature, as besides the Mishnah, one of the earliest sources of halacha that we have, states, "Velo yivchasulo me'arba koso shel yayin sheish ben kedei revias." It tells you that the minimum size of the cup for the four cups is a revias, is a fourth of a lug, or a log. A log is a bigger shear, which is four times the size of a revias, a little bit circular. But that's, in any case, that's how much the cup has to hold. If one doesn't have to drink that much, it's sufficient to drink most of a revias, or a certain lechatchila, one should drink a whole revias. Or most of the cup. The exact details about this are not the subject for this year, but in any case, one doesn't necessarily have to drink the entire cup that one is using. Certainly, drinking a whole revias is sufficient. So what is a revias? The Psikta Zutarta, which is not the main source for these things, is just the only source that I found that presented both discussions of how big a revias is in a nice, concise manner. Rabbi Hoseinu Amru Besof Maseches Psachim. In the end of Tractate Psachim in the Talmud Bavli, it says, Revias Shel Torah, Etzba'ayim al Etzba'ayim, two finger widths by two finger widths, Berum Etzba'ayim, V'chatzi Etzba, V'chomesh Etzba. And with a height of 2.7 finger widths. So finger widths is the thumb. So if you go two thumbs like this, and the other dimension, you have 0.7 finger widths, as you can see in your chart on the bottom. 2 by 2 by 2.7. That's a container that will give you the size of a revias. The hu revias halug beitza umechza. That's the fourth of a lug, which is also, in addition to the measurement in thumb widths, we have another measurement, which is an egg and a half. The size of an egg and a half. If you look back in time a little bit, this is completely fine. We have no problems with these measurements whatsoever. They completely correspond. If you find the size of an amma from ancient excavations of a cubit that you can further subdivide into finger widths, and there was also a Roman measurement called a digitus or digitus, if you want to be proper with your Latin pronunciation or classical, which is means finger, of course, digit, and that was approximately 1.85 centimeters. So if you do the math, the 1.85 centimeters by 1.85 centimeters by whatever the 2.7 times 1.85 centimeters is, it comes out to about 75 milliliters, 75 cc's, which is 2.6 ounces for a revias. The cup for the abacosa is 2.6 ounces. You hear shiurim nowadays, you have 3 ounces, 4 ounces, even 5 ounces. So according to this measurement, it would be much smaller, 2.6 ounces. And this also corresponds to 1.5 times the size of an egg. An average egg is about 50 cc's. So 50 times 1.5 is 75. So we have no problem whatsoever with these measurements. We see that our revias comes out to 75 cc's, 2.6 ounces. Now, we have a major problem with this, however. If you take a thumb width nowadays, it's much bigger than 1.85 centimeters. It's more like 2.2, 2.3, 2.4. It's a little bit of a shy like exactly how you measure it. But it's something of that nature. So we have, it was first discussed a little bit earlier than what I'm about to tell you, but the main proponent of this new measurement of a thumb width was the Noda of Yehuda, also known as the Tzlach. He lived in Prague in the 18th century. He was the rabbi. So he measured thumb widths, and of his time, of 2.4 centimeters approximately, and he found that the shear was twice the size of what had previously been assumed to be. He found that the shear was 150 milliliters instead of 75 milliliters approximately. The shear of a Revius, using his thumb widths and his time. So he had a problem. He had a problem, which is that if you measure using eggs, it comes out 75 approximately. And if you measure using thumb widths, it comes out 150. So what could be the answer? What did the Tzlach say? He said it must be that eggs nowadays are half the size that they were in the times of Chazal. So we have to use the measurement of eggs that were in the times of Chazal to figure out how big the shiurim in the Torah should be. So we have to use a shiur of 150 milliliters. And of course, if you hold that a kezias is half an egg, nowadays you would have to use the shiur of a whole egg, because eggs nowadays are half the size. So that's where the really big shear comes from eating matzah that some people are makbid on. But the problem with the Noda Behuda's approach is that it's not true, that eggs nowadays are not half the size that they were in the times of Chazal. In fact, they have archaeological excavations from Pompeii, a whole Roman city that was preserved in volcanic ash, and the eggs there are smaller than they were nowadays, not twice the size. So we have a major problem. So he rejects the other possibility, that his thumb widths are bigger than the times that of Chazal, because nowadays we know there's Yeridas Hadoros, the generations keep getting less and less significant, so we must be smaller than we were in the times of Chazal, which is also not true, that people are taller nowadays than they were in the times of Chazal. So there are many, many problems with the Noda Behuda, the Tzlach's approach to this issue. Probably what it just meant, even if thumb widths were not exactly that size, it was a standard measurement. Sort of like feet are a standard measurement in nowadays, even though not everyone's foot is exactly that size, of course. There's a variety. And even though it's very, very unusual for someone to have such a small thumb width of 1.85 centimeters, either they were smaller back then or they had a different calculation, it's not really clear. So that's a major issue. Now, the only problem, so we could reject the Tzlach out of hand, that we say the shiurim are not double, but there is an issue with that as well. And that issue is proposed by the Chazon Ish, who's known as the major instigator of these new larger shiurim nowadays. And he said, it doesn't matter if the Tzlach is right or wrong. It could very well be that the Tzlach is not correct in his assumption that eggs nowadays are smaller than they were in the times of Chazal. But since we've accepted to measure according to our thumb widths, then nowadays our thumb widths are bigger, and many of the rabbis in the Noda Behuda's time and a little bit later, including the Gra and the Chasam Sofer, and many big rabbis decided that this was the shear. And it's supposed to be the purview of the rabbis in each generation to determine how the Torah decides what shearim are. So since they decided that this was the shear, so we have to follow it, even though the logic behind it is not really correct. So that's, I mean, you can't argue with that. That was the Chazanish's opinion. As is well known, Reb Chaim Noe, who's the major person who argues with the Chazanish on this matter, felt that was not true. He felt that since we have direct evidence that the shear of the earlier authorities was smaller, so we could go with the calculation of the earlier authorities. By the way, though, just as a side note, as you'll see in my chart on the bottom, Reb Chaim Noe was actually a little bit bigger than it was supposed to be, because his coin that he was using to determine the values of the measures that were in the times of the Rambam and the Gaonim was a little bit bigger than the coin that the Rambam himself used. So his shiurim are actually, when they came out, they were thought to be a big chumrah. even though nowadays they're considered to be a big kula. But in any case, so Reb Chaim Noah felt that that was not the halacha, but the Chaznish felt that you had to follow the bigger shear, even though the logic behind it was not correct. That even some of the authorities, by the way, who accepted the bigger shear as insofar as the Revius was concerned, did not accept it as insofar as the Kezias was concerned, because there was already literature on the books that said that it doesn't matter how big and small each the fruits are in each generation, everybody has to go according to his or her own estimation, and that's the way the shiurim are formulated, that you go according to the fruits that are in your times. So that's that. Even if you want to be machmer as regards the Revius, to go according to our current thumb widths, that's only because Chazal explicitly gave the measurement of the Revius in thumb widths. They gave an exact measurement that way. But you don't have to be machmer about the shear of a Kezias. Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the founder of the Volozhin Yeshiva, a student of the Vilna Gaon, held this way, even though purportedly, it says in the Maisa Rav that his teacher, the Vilna Gaon, held that one had to be stringent about the shear of a Kezias as well. But certainly, the Chazon Ish also intrinsically accepted that. Even though he might have been a little bit more machmer in practice, the Chazon Ish also intrinsically accepted the idea that one goes according to the olives in each generation. So I feel that, again, certainly, even if you want to be machmer, you don't need to double the shear of half an egg, of half a current egg. But Rabbi Willig, my Rebbe, also agrees with that, by the way. But certainly somebody who has difficulty eating or any reason to be lenient whatsoever can eat the shear of an actual size of an olive. No, you don't. You just estimate based on the matzah that the way you're eating it. You don't have to grind it up and make calculations or anything like that. So just as a last point, there is a very interesting support for the opinion of the Chazon Ish. And this is actually a support for the idea that I find many times, that sometimes rabbis may be correct, but not for the reasons that they express. There is some sort of hashkacha, there is some sort of divine inspiration that great Talmidei Chacham have. Doesn't mean the Chazon Ish was right in everything, but sometimes rabbis are right, even though they don't have the right logic behind it necessarily. It is a very severe question on the approach that I presented earlier, and I don't really have an answer. So maybe one of you can help me find an answer. Or maybe if I continue working on this, hopefully one day I'll find what the answer is. The Mishnah in Maseches Kelim tells us, source number 10, Midos halach vayovesh shiuran bitalki zomid baris. The Mishnah in Kelim tells us that the Torah shiurim that existed in the times of the Midmar and the times of Moshe Rabbeinu are the same as the Roman measurements, the italki, the Italian measurements that were in use in the times of the Mishnah, the Roman measurements. Now, historically, I don't know what the story is with that, but in any case, that's what the Mishnah was assuming. The Talmud Yerushalmi states, so that's not necessarily a kasha. There were Roman measurements that were about 75 cc's or a little smaller, so it could be the Revius corresponds to that. But the Yerushalmi says, Arba kosa sha'amru yeshnan Revius yain ba'italki. The four cups are supposed to have an Italian Revius in them. What's the measurement in Goyish measurements? Rev Mana Omar, tetarton urevia. A tetarton and a quarter. Now this makes sense. Tetarton comes from the Shoresh tetra, which in Greek means four. And there was a Roman measurement that corresponded to this, which is called a quartarius. Quartarius also from the Shoresh Quartos, which means four. So it makes sense that a revius of quarter will correspond to that. It makes sense very much linguistically. So it seems to be that the Mishnah, that the Talmud Yerushalmi even tells us that it's a tetarton and a quarter. A tetarton plus a quarter of a tetarton, which doesn't really make too much sense, and we'll go more into that in a second. But in any case, a tetarton or a quartarius was 137 milliliters, which is just shy of the shear of the Chazon Ish. How this works with the beitzim, with the measurement of the eggs, which was certainly, this was certainly way more than an egg and a half from Roman times, I don't know what the answer is. It could be there was some confusion about the linguistics of it, that the Shoresh was four in Greek and Latin, and the Shoresh was four in Hebrew as well. I don't know what the answer is. And even if you say it's a tetarton and a quarter, plus a quarter, then you get the 170, 170 milliliters, which is huge. That's, I think, it's over 5 ounces. Like, I don't know the exact measurement offhand, but it's big. Say the Briskarov was actually makbid on a revius of 170. He was even more machmer than the Chaznish, so I guess he had some hashkacha protis as well. But I don't get it. But the Roman measurements that seemingly correspond, even though you could say correspond to the different Roman measurements, are close to the bigger shear. So, in the tradition of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, who was Mekel on the Kezias and was Machmer on the Revius, there is more room to be stringent regarding the shear of wine that one drinks than the shear of matzah that one eats, which is certainly the size of an olive in all places and times. But I just point out, source number 12, I'll spare you the German, but it was a source that was published in 1897 describing the relationship between the Greek and Roman measurements and the Hebrew measurements. And he says that he doesn't want to interpret it as tetarton revia, as a tetarton and a quarter. He wants to interpret it as a tetarton or a revius. He doesn't want to say urevia, just says you could choose between either one of those shiurim. So then you get 137 milliliters, and that's how I calculated it based on this. As he says in the last line, 6.9235 Parisian cubic inches, which I calculated as about 137 milliliters. So I have this nice chart for you in the bottom that you can take a look at later, but the basic conclusion of tonight's exercise is that the shear of matzah and moror of a kezias is very small. One does not need to use those charts, halacha lemaisa, one does not need to use those charts, even if one wants to be machmir, just estimate that you eat a half an egg. But there is room, although I first to admit for hundreds and hundreds of years the tradition in Klal Yisrael was to use the smaller shear of a revius, just 75 milliliters or maybe a little bit more. Even the Chafetz Chaim had a cup that was not as big as the Chaznish shear, even though he also suggested that maybe you should be machmir for this. So the Mesorah, the Minag, for hundreds of years in Klal Yisrael was a smaller revius, but if one's going to be machmir on one of the shiurim of the Seder, it makes much more sense to be machmir on the shiur of a revius, the Chaznish shiur of 150 or 137 or something thereabouts, than to be machmir on the size of the olive.